Welcome to The Forum on 90.5 WCBE. Every week we bring you the conversations that shape Columbus, straight from the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club. The Forum is where leaders, thinkers, and community voices like yours come together for lunch in downtown Columbus to unpack the issues that matter most to Central Ohio. Want to join us in person? Tickets and details about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. This week, we unpack a new report revealing how the city's population, economy, housing, and health will change by the year 2050. Columbus's aging and growing population will have major impacts on housing, social programs, workforce participation, and more over the next 25 years. Joining us this week to unpack the new study and its implications are Michael Corey, Executive Director of the Human Service Chamber of Franklin County, Rhea Cunningham, CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central Ohio, Columbus City Council member Melissa Green, and Dr. Bill Lafayette, owner of Regionomics. Your host is Jordan Laird, Columbus government and politics reporter with the Columbus Dispatch. Let's dive into this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum. A bigger Central Ohio will need a bigger safety net.
Thank you, Sophia. I'm excited too. We're going to start off, I'm going to ask Michael to give us a little context of how we got here today with this report from Regionomics from Bill.
Thank you so much, Jordan. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Since I get to go first, I'm going to waste 30 seconds of time and do some quick thank yous. If you run a nonprofit, will you stand up and accept the appreciation of this crowd, please? Get up. These wonderful people and the 22,000 people that work for them in Franklin County generate $2 billion in annual revenue and economic impact in Franklin County, and they're serving over a million people every year. And the margins to do that are thinner and thinner. So each of you are heroes, and I'm so grateful for all of you for everything that you do. And if you are in government, well, all of you that are in government, especially our elected officials, please stand up so that we can thank you for the work that you're doing for our community. Whoever made Brittany stand up, I'm glad. Thank you for standing up, Brittany. Okay, what was the question again? Oh, how'd we get here?
How did we get let me remind you the question, Michael. How did we get here to having this report that we're gonna look at today?
Yeah, I don't remember. So for the last several years, we've been saying to anyone who will listen, and by we, I mean anyone in the nonprofit space, to anyone, that there's a difficult bit of calculus that's emerged. An equation that doesn't add up anymore. Demand and costs are up and resources are down. We have to do something about that. So Councilmember Green is the chair of the Health and Human Services and Equity Committee at Columbus City Council, and I was yelling into thin air about this with her a couple years ago, and we said we should probably get some specifics on the numbers of people that we have to ensure we can serve in the future, knowing that today we don't have enough resources to meet the demand, given the fast retreating resources. So we said, well, who's really good with numbers and looking at things and making projections? And it took us about 3 seconds to say Dr. Bill Lafayette. We reached out to Dr. Lafayette, and we couldn't even finish the ask before he was like, yes, I'm all in. I might be exaggerating a little bit, but he's been a wonderful support and asset through this, and I think we're all going to learn something today from what he has to say. But that's how we got to today.
Okay, and Michael, quickly remind people in the audience or listening, how can they read this report later?
Thank you for that, Jordan. You can go to humanservicechamber.org. And we just published it today. You can go there, click on it, and read the whole PDF. It's a very easy 100-page read, very light reading.
For those who don't want to read all 100 pages, I'm not going to ask all of you to rattle off statistics, but what issue did this report highlight that you found most important or alarming? I'm going to go down the line and end with Bill. So, Michael?
I think alarming maybe is not the right first word for it, but we know today we can't meet the need in this region, and this is a generous region. We have the good problem of rapid growth here. And Bill's report lays out with great precision where we're going to see that growth. And the number that stuck out to me was, I think, about 90,000 people at 200% federal poverty line or below are anticipated to call Columbus home by 2050. So we need to generate resources to ensure we can help all those people flourish in this community. That will require action. And we don't have a plan for that just yet. So that's what stuck out to me, Jordan.
Rhea, what stood out to you?
I'm on. Oh, yep. Thank you. There is demand out of the youth development space and the tens of thousands of young people who are not actively in the workforce now, aren't looking and are not educating post high school. That is then compounded by 2035. And my immediate question is, what are we doing with these young people? And if we're not embracing them and viewing them as an investment opportunity in our collective future, we need to be thinking about planning sooner rather than later.
I would echo certainly to probably top response similar to what Michael said. And I think one thing that I would note with that is that, you know, we're talking about 200% of federal poverty, right? We're talking about, a measure that is no longer anywhere close to accurate in helping us determine whether or not a family is doing well or not doing well. And as inflation continues to grow, that 200% of poverty marker is going to become so much more unrealistic as this time continues to progress. And so that's the one thing I would say about that. But to add something new into the conversation, and one thing that really jumped out to me was some of the data around workforce and education in our labor market. And so thinking about, growth of our city and job growth, in the city of Columbus, our primary source of revenue is through income taxes. So we're talking a lot about needing to create jobs and employment in order to be able to keep our lights on, keep your roads paved, keep your trash picked up. And as we're looking at wage needs into the future, the number of new jobs we'll need to create, such a majority of that is not actually new jobs. It's filling old jobs as people are leaving those positions and as our workforce is getting older. I think for me as a legislator, having that context, I think really colors differently the way that we're looking at investments in economic development and job creation incentives, where it's like, should we maybe be thinking about this in a different lens, not through the lens of creating new jobs, but from the lens of workforce development.
Bill, did they hit all the highlights from your report?
Well, they did. And I would say yes to all of the above. But the one thing that really stood out to me that I hadn't thought much about before is the need for elder care. The way that we fund childcare is that we pay professional providers. And that way, those needing childcare, the adults, the parents, can join the labor force, go to work. But the way that we fund elder care is by primarily paying the family members to subsidize their not being able to work. And so as the number of older people grows and grows over the coming years, we are going to be pulling a lot of people out of the labor force unless we not necessarily increase funding, but change how the funding is provided. Pay professional providers, and that way we not only free those folks, the family members, to go out and work, we also reduce the burnout that's such a problem with elder care.
So for statistic and policy wonks, 100-page report, gonna be on the Human Services website. So this survey has a lot of good stats outlining how many of our neighbors need help right now with food, healthcare, childcare, and lots of other expenses. What does this growing need look like on the ground for nonprofits serving these people? And I wanna start with Rhea, if that's okay, as somebody who runs a nonprofit.
Thank you, Jordan. Bill, I want to come back to something you mentioned around the infrastructure and the planned approach for funding childcare. Well, that's true if you are a licensed and regulated childcare provider. But there are many of us in the youth development space in this after school time and summertime who are not licensed, regulated childcare providers in that sense. We do, as youth development professionals, have standards and requirements and expectations. A shameless plug, Boys and Girls Club of America shrouds us with a ton of safety measures and evidence-informed curriculum and a pathway by which, if we're intentional around how we embrace our young people with programmatic experiences and partnerships, we get them ready for life now and into the future. So I say that to say what we have experienced is different than licensed care providers as it relates to funding. We were preparing for this discussion a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about this youth development space is funded from a happenstance perspective, right? Someone has a favorite organization, perhaps, or a long-standing relationship with an organization. Us youth development professionals are not all created equally, and we don't all do the same thing. And so what I see is an opportunity to collaborate differently, both with one another in this space, but also with our investment community, to think about how we fund this work for sustainability, because we are ushering in the workforce of tomorrow, while at the same time, we too are supporting caregivers and generating economic impacts as their families come to our doors.
Michael or council member, do you want to jump in on what the human need looks like on the ground right now?
You first, council member. I said it first, you go first.
In terms of needs of parents and families and...
I mean, this the report covers a lot of different human needs.
Yeah. I mean, I think right now it's no secret. People across our community are struggling to get by, struggling to keep a roof over their heads, struggling to pay their utility bills, struggling to put food on the table for their families. And again, you know, it is impossible to separate the impact that investments in these core safety nets have, not just on promoting individual well-being of people today, but the long-term economic stability that helps prevent those hardships in the future. It's a cycle. And right now, you know, we have been underinvesting. And not just we, as in the city of Columbus, we as a society. For as long as social welfare programs have existed, it has been a patchwork of funding that has allowed these critical life-saving programs to be able to succeed. But you know who gets up and goes to work every day? Healthy people, people that have stable housing, people that have access to transportation. And so when we invest in our people, we are investing not just in making sure that they can, in fact, keep a roof over their head, because every person in the city of Columbus deserves to be able to have a safe place to sleep at night, that they can, in fact, put food on the table in their, for their families, because one in three kids in my neighborhood on the hilltop shouldn't be going to bed hungry every night, that they can afford to pay the utility bills so that they're not sweltering in the heat in their homes, not able to go outside and seek relief or stay inside and seek relief. We can do all of that by investing in this critical human infrastructure, but we can also help prevent these problems in the future. There are investments that make dollars and cents.
Yeah. Michael, do you want to jump in on the human need or what it's like for nonprofits, what it's like for your members to address this?
I'll try to be brief as a recovering attorney can be. It's very expensive to live in the United States right now. And ever since 2020, with the inflationary spikes that have occurred, including the one that began on about March 1st, it's that much harder for everyday Americans or any day Americans to not need support in some way. And that alone has driven up demand for nonprofits while concurrently driving up their own costs. To wit, since March 1st, 90% of our members report that their own operational costs have gone up. Now, when we have a demand or something happens that's an increase, we usually quickly move resources toward it to address it. If crime goes up, we invest more in addressing crime. If a healthcare need surges, we move resources toward that. But for health and human services nonprofits, we tend to start with saying, be more efficient, collaborate more, work harder, wear more hats, things of that nature, and eventually we'll find more resources for you to do the work. But when we have a situation like we have now, which is a bit of a perfect storm that the community is feeling here and across the United States, where the opposite of a rising tide lifting all ships is happening, a retreating tide is lowering them. And we're still asking nonprofits to just figure it out and be the superheroes that they are. They can only superhero so much. They don't do it alone. So it's tough, and yet there is still this resilience to keep figuring it out in spite of it. And that's an extraordinary thing, but we got to do more to help the nonprofits help the people that need it.
I want to acknowledge the limitations of this report in this rapidly changing environment we find ourselves in. This question's for any panelist who wants to answer, maybe Michael or Rhea. What are some of the stressors on our human services sector that could still lie ahead? What keeps you up at night, Michael?
My two-year-old.
Well.
I think there are significant changes that some federal legislation passed last year are going to bring to bear. We're already seeing the ramifications of SNAP cuts. There are 4 million fewer Americans on SNAP today than there was 12 months ago. That drives up demand for nonprofits. And there's $1 trillion in cuts to Medicaid that are going to hit soon, but not yet. There are threats to property taxes and income taxes and whether or not they're allowed to even be levied. That would create challenges for our sector to navigate. Those are some of the things keeping me up at night. And it's difficult for communities alone to bear the brunt of that, certainly difficult for nonprofits alone to bear the brunt of that, but we kind of have no choice. We have to figure it out as best we can, and that's going to require urgency and boldness and good communication and candor and being planful and honest about where we're at and where we want to go in spite of the things we can't control from Columbus.
So many things. First, I'll try to distill this into three things. First, what keeps me up is a lack of neighborliness. We talk about, you know, the nonprofit community cannot do this work alone. Again, I'm coming from the space of youth development as an economic impact both now and into the future. So a lack of humanity, and whatever the other whys are, but a lack of humanity to recognize that we are all responsible for the young people in our city, because blink our eye, those same young people will be taking care of us in some way, shape, or form. Part two is the lack of appreciation for the nonprofit human services space as a business model. Thank you. Thanks. I come from the for-profit space, and mission doesn't happen without money. And I believe there is such an opportunity across our community to really rally around, this is a business. And our income streams look different from a traditional for-profit business. I don't put a sticker on, you know, membership that actually carries the load of my costs. And so how do we become more neighborly, shape-shift the concept of youth development away from charity and the business that it is, and really secure sustainable investment? So those are my three up-at-nighters. We are not neighborly enough.
We do not see this work as an actual business driving economic impact to ultimately drive sustainable investment.
There is a pervasive underlying economic factor that we really need to talk about, and it drives all of this. Up until about the late 70s, early 80s, incomes rose very much in tandem with productivity increases. But since about 1980, that relationship broke. Productivity continued to increase greatly. Wages, though, for the most part, especially wages of lower income individuals, didn't. And so that is the elephant in the room that's really driving all of this.
If I could just segue, I really want to move us along to now that we've outlined what's at stake, these federal factors that are affecting us locally, let's talk about what Columbus can do about it. So what can the Central Ohio community do to meet the challenges of growing human needs here? And we can go down the line with this one. Council member, if you want to talk, you haven't talked in a little bit.
Oh yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot. I think there's so much more that we can and we should and we must be doing to address these disparities. And I mean disparities both like within the sector and how the sector is being supported, as well as the, you know, the economic realities of the people in our community that are experiencing hardship. You know, I think that at the beginning of this year, we released the Funding Review Advisory Commission committee's findings from this year-long review that we did, where we looked at the needs across various different sectors and, you know, evaluated different funding mechanisms that could be used to be able to bridge those gaps. I think that there was a lot of tangible recommendations in there of how, you know, here at the city, which is, that's within my control, well, not my sole control, but that's my jurisdiction, of course, that we could use to generate additional revenue. I think lots of opportunity for us to be able to partner community-wide with our philanthropic partners. A lot of this is not just about how much we're investing, although it most certainly is about how much we're investing, but also how we're investing, using community goals and, you know, kind of shared funding models to grow a community pot much larger, where instead of funding a $5,000 grant for a mural in a community somewhere, we can now fund a $50,000 FTE to keep a food pantry open. So thinking about not just how much we're investing, but what we're investing. And really, you know, I think, you know, from the city perspective, you know, we've been pretty open about our own budget challenges and shortfalls. And a need to try to bridge those, which is also the perfect opportunity for us to figure out how do we reduce spending even further, so that we can, you know, before we even generate an additional dollar, so that we can invest our own resources that we have currently at our disposal more strategically. You know, the people, I talk about this a lot, people always, I think historically have imagined the role of local government as being infrastructure related. You keep your lights on, your roads paved, your trash picked up, your snow plowed. And I'm not saying that that any municipality should be the payer of first resort. You know, these are big problems. They require federal support. They require state support. They require philanthropic support. But when all of those other things fail, we are the last resort. What I know to be true about the city of Columbus is that the city of Columbus is a city that cares about people, and caring about people means investing in people. And it also means investing in the people who help care for our people. So if we have to make accommodations at the city to do that, then I absolutely think that we should.
Thank you, Council Member. Rhea, do you want to jump in on what the solutions are, what you want to see coming next?
Sure. Continued conversation with intentionality for action around collaboration, around reframing this work, again, from the youth development space. This is not a charity. This work that we do is socioeconomically agnostic. Thank you. Employers continue to say that as new employees come to apply for work, they're not ready. And it's not just the technical skills they're not ready for, it's the soft skills. It's back to being neighborly. And how do you build community? And how do you problem solve? And how do you recognize the world is not just about you? How do you socially, emotionally regulate yourself? How do you navigate conflict? Those of us in this space for high quality youth development, that's what we focus on. And it is no one organization's responsibility. And so for me, thank you. I'm not athletic either. For me, it is, let's have some serious conversation around the city of Columbus. The urgency is now.
We need more money. Period. We need more money. We can't pretend like that's not priority 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. We have to prioritize that and make it happen. We have to do it tomorrow, and we have to be planful for it to happen in the next 5 years and 50 years. We can't keep pretending like we can't invest proportional to the growth of our community like we have in other areas. We have to do it with this too. It is not just the responsibility of the city or the county or philanthropy or anybody else. It's everyone's responsibility, and we haven't been meeting it, period. Specifically, the FRAC does suggest several ideas, some of which can be turned around quickly.
Hi.
Some of which can be turned around over time. Some of which are practically not palatable to this political moment, some of which are. We have to pursue all of them. We have to pursue them on a thoughtful timeline. And the FRAC can't just be the be-all, end-all. It was a living, breathing document with ideas that were thoughtfully suggested, but there are many more that we have to be considering and looking for across the United States. Are we in conversation with the 50 largest cities in the United States, figuring out in real time, because we're all going through it, we're all trying to figure out. To help us do that, so that we're not just talking like I usually do, there's someone named Priyam Khan, who just wrapped up a graduate program at Harvard, and she's working on a report that will come out later this year looking at other ideas, and I wanted to make sure I shared two that are distinct from what's in the FRAC report. One suggests a corporate philanthropy model modeled on Minneapolis's 5% pledge of their corporate profits. Based on her projections, that would net up to $100 million all by itself. That should, of course, be in addition to what our generous corporate community is doing. Another idea, and I'm going to regret saying this out loud because I'm not smart enough to understand it, is a community bond program allowing people and organizations to directly invest in community priorities. Those are two of many ideas we have to talk about, and even if we discard them, we have to be pursuing ideas aggressively and looking for low-hanging fruit and the fruit we can't reach yet, and being planful about all of it, because we can't just sit back and take these consequences that are barreling toward us. We have to ensure everyone in this community has what it needs. That will benefit all of us.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE, commissioned by Columbus City Council and the Human Service Chamber of Franklin County. An all-new report examines how population growth and change are likely to reshape housing, poverty, health, and more in Central Ohio over the next 25 years. Joining us this week to unpack the new study and its implications are Michael Corey with the Human Service Chamber of Franklin County, Rhea Cunningham with Boys and Girls Clubs of Central Ohio, Columbus City Council member Melissa Green, and Bill Lafayette with Regionomics. Your host is Jordan Laird with the Columbus Dispatch. We'll get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum. A bigger Central Ohio will need a bigger safety net after a short break.
What makes a great leader? That's the question we explore in Innovating Leadership, Co-Creating Our Future. Hi, I'm Maureen Metcalf. Each week, we dive deep into the systems, mindsets, and traits of great leadership by interviewing the world's best leaders, from business founders to prime ministers. Their insights and practical experience provide a guide to help you become your leadership best. Take the lead and listen now on the WCBE podcast experience at wcbe.org, on the WCBE app, and on NPR One.
I know when you hear podcasts, you may think, I'm not great with technology. I don't want to have one more thing to worry about. But I'm here to tell you, you're missing out on so many amazing stories. And WCBE has made it easier than ever to listen to their own curated list of locally produced podcasts. Just go to WCBE.org and click the podcast experience. You don't have to learn how to use any new technology. Just click on the podcast you want to hear and click play. And don't forget to listen to my show, The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent.
It is said every album represents a step in an artist's journey. Hey there, music lovers. Tano Jones here of the Tano Jones Revelry. I'm inviting you to listen to Music Journeys with Mike Foley. Mike mixes music and conversation with artists to share what informed and inspired their latest project, how the love of music began, or perhaps what music means to them, and so much more. Music Journeys airs Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WCBE. Recent episodes are available on the major podcast platforms and the WCBE app. To hear more from all the musicians featured since its start in 2018, including me, Tano Jones, look for Music Journeys in WCBE's podcast experience at WCBE.org. You guys be well. Peace.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, we unpack a new report revealing how the city's population, economy, housing, and health will change by the year 2050. Columbus's aging and growing population will have major impacts on housing, social programs, workforce participation, and more over the next 25 years. Joining us this week to unpack the new study and its implications are Michael Corey, Executive Director of the Human Service Chamber of Franklin County, Rhea Cunningham, CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central Ohio, Columbus City Council member Melissa Green, and Dr. Bill Lafayette, owner of Regionomics. Your host is Jordan Laird, Columbus government and politics reporter with the Columbus Dispatch. Let's get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum. A bigger Central Ohio will need a bigger safety net.
Bill, did you want to say anything on solutions? I had a specific follow-up question, but did you...
Well, all of the above, I think, are really good ideas. But in addition, I'm concerned about housing. And I've talked about housing to CMC several times before, but we must build more housing. I have in the report a projection that we'll need about 18,000 units per year. Last year, we put in 13,000. The longer we delay, the longer we make it difficult to build housing, the bigger that number's going to get. And so you have a quarter of the region paying more than half of their income on housing. And that leads to instability across the board. So that would be my big recommendation.
Okay. I want to circle back to some of what was said about the FRAC report, the Funding Review Advisory Committee report, and the tangible things that they called for that might not be politically palatable. And as you guys have said, those things are taxes. So raising taxes is not popular, especially right now in Ohio. So why are the human services something taxpayers should fund? Council member, you want to start?
They've been funding it like they fund so many other essential elements of infrastructure in so many ways. Why would we not continue doing so? It benefits all of us. It is essential that we are preserving the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and you can't do that unless you have resources available for the community that needs it. It is the best investment we can possibly make, our people.
Yeah, I'll say the same. You know, I always talk about the infrastructure. You know, we fund infrastructure on a regular basis, but it is not our streets or our lights or our bridges or our building that's our greatest asset. It's our people. And in fact, in a city that, you know, the vast majority of our revenue comes from income taxes, i.e. healthy people going to work every single day. You know, if we are not investing in cultivating and maintaining and developing a healthy work workforce, then we don't have the resources that are needed to do that more traditional infrastructure work. And so again, it all kind of goes in together. And then, you know, as we're making these investments, then you have the benefit of healthy, happy, safe, thriving communities, which is something that we all desire and we all know is possible and we all deserve. And so I can't think of a reason why we as a government wouldn't want to be investing in the well-being of our people.
Thank you so much, everyone. It's CMC's long-standing tradition to take audience questions. We'll move to questions from our live stream and in-person audience in just a few minutes. If you have a question for our panelists, now is the perfect time to head over to the microphone. If you're joining us on YouTube, just drop your questions in the chat. But panelists, before we turn it over to the audience, I have a last question that I would like to ask each of you. What is at stake for Columbus and human needs if nothing changes and the status quo stays the same? Bill, you want to start? You're right next to me.
More people go hungry. Fewer people get meaningful employment. Fewer people are adequately trained to be productive citizens of this community. Fewer people are housed and clothed, and other things too.
Everything is at stake. If we continue to fall short and fall even shorter and shorter as our city continues to grow, because, you know, as our city continues to grow, or the population continues to grow, you know, folks are going to move here and they're going to bring their hopes and dreams for the future, but they're also very people-y. People are people-y. They're going to bring people-y challenges too. And we are not positioning ourselves to meet the current needs of our community today. I think that was the whole point of, you know, this study was really looking at how do we not just have a snapshot of what the current gap in funding for human services is, which is nearing $200 million a year annually, and that was before federal and state budget cuts happened. That was a snapshot in March of 2025, a close to $200 million gap in funding for to stabilize our social safety nets and meet our current needs today, and how can we project the revenue that's going to be needed so we can plan and prepare for the future, and we absolutely must do it. Everything's at stake.
I don't have anything incremental to add.
I respect that. I want to think about the question in terms of what could we gain if we invested properly and proportionally in our community? And I think we have done that in so many meaningful ways just within Franklin County. There's a reason we have the most extraordinary library system in North America and the best zoo. And we're making enormous and appropriate investments in housing and in transportation. Why aren't we doing it in this area? It is hard, but we can do it. And we don't all have to fit the bill just in this room. It isn't just the city's responsibility or the county's responsibility, but we have to do it. And then we can become not just a great city with aspirations to be better. If we don't make these investments, we will slow ourselves down. We will backpedal. We will not be the city that we think we can be or that some of us think we already are. We're not. But we can be. And I think that promise and a thoughtful, proportional series of sustained investments in it would allow us to weather whatever is happening at the State House or in Congress. It will extend beyond term-to-term changes. And there are efforts afoot to make things harder from term to term. There's a federal rule that we all need you to go back to your computers and submit a public comment on by July 13th that would make partisan every federal grant dollar to a nonprofit. That is not a sustainable or thoughtful policy. That would just create uncertainty from one administration to the next, just in basic delivery of services, which we've been doing in a bipartisan way since the 1960s.
Thank you, everyone. Now we want to hear from all of you. Doug Buchanan from CMC is curating questions from our live stream audience. For those of you here in the room, please join Doug at the microphone. Doug, what's our first question?
Jordan, thank you so much. Thank you so much to today's panelists. Thank you all for joining us. If you have a question for today's panelists, please do join us here at the microphone. We'll try to get to as many of your questions as we can today. If you're watching online on YouTube, please type your question into the chat. We'll try to get to as many of those as we can. Great questions at CMC always have two things in common. They can be asked in just a sentence or two. And what punctuation mark does a question end with? It ends with a question mark. Thank you very much. It's always good to remind ourselves of that. In our pre-forum survey that we sent out, our audience said they were most concerned with affordable housing and homelessness. That's out of seven human services categories. What do you consider the most impactful ways for Central Ohio to rise to this particular challenge, affordable housing and homelessness?
I have a thought. I think that, as I said, I think that we need to make developing housing at all price points easier. We need to align our development with the emerging trends in demographics, which are very different from what they used to be. And we have to combat NIMBY, which is a big, big problem.
I think that, you know, to your point, I think strategically directing incentives and strategically looking at how we can rapidly create growth of housing in the areas where we have the largest deficits, particularly in the low income, like below 30% area, median income area, where we have literally 27 units to every 100 people that needs them. Right off the bat, that's 75% almost of people who are going to be without a home in our community. And then when it comes, so we need to be incentivizing as much as we can in the areas with the greatest need, rather than just, you know, blanket, you know, housing for, you know, at any income level. I think we also need to be looking at how do we address the needs that exist among people who are experiencing homelessness and housing instability today. Now, obviously, it takes time to build a home, but we have people in our community that are experiencing hardship right now that need our supports, you know, in any way possible to be able to navigate and overcome and live through their current circumstance. And I think that, you know, oftentimes the focus on, much like investments generally in the human services sector, I think people love to invest, I think historically it's been much more palatable to invest in workforce development so we can have people that can go out and achieve a high paying job so that they are not experiencing economic instability, as opposed to investing in giving what people perceive as giving away something for free, or giving, you know, to be able to give supports for the now for people that are experiencing hardship. And the situation with our unsheltered neighbors here in Columbus is no different. They have nowhere to go. Last week, when we were experiencing this huge heat wave, we had record-breaking waiting lists at our homeless shelters. I think close to 600 people, 599, I believe, was the highest number, in the middle of the summertime. Nowhere to turn. And so we, again, we don't need to be the first resort, but we are the last resort. We, the city, we, the community, we, the people of this fine city. And we, you know, we are not meeting the needs today, but we can. We can meet the needs if we invest differently. We think about solutions from a new perspective.
There's a remarkably rare bipartisan piece of legislation that just passed in Congress called the Road to Housing Act. We're hoping it gets signed, but even if it doesn't get signed, there's a way for that to become law. That's the best housing legislation in 40 years. That will help. That's something nationally that we have to look forward to. In the meantime, our wonderful shelter providers need $25 million in sustained investments to keep their work going, to meet the need today and that's growing. And we have to build, forgive me for saying that out loud and mirroring somebody else. Austin, Texas has done something right. Their costs are coming down, even though the population is growing there. I know that we have a lot of wonderful leaders looking at Austin and other communities. We have a lot of investments forthcoming at the local level too, but there is some promise here. We just have to do it faster.
Hi, I'm Lisa Rovner. I have a question about corporate tax incentives and tax abatements. Is that something that folks are thinking about? I know obviously a lot of new corporations coming here to Columbus, but they're getting a lot of incentives and we're losing out on that tax income.
Yes. Yeah.
About that before, there's a lot of tax incentives being passed by city council from time to time. How are you evaluating those proposals?
I mean, I think for me, it's interesting. My perspective on tax incentives has most certainly evolved over the last 2 years, particularly, you know, the economic section was probably the one that got me most interested in trying to think about this issue differently than I think our city historically has. Because again, you know, oftentimes we're incentivizing the creation of new jobs for the sake of creation of new jobs, not incentivizing jobs that are needed in specific areas. What are our fastest growing job sectors, our largest job sectors here? What are the ones that are most impenetrable for, you know, future advancements in AI and other types of you know, technologies that might alter or change our workforce here in Central Ohio. I think for me, you know, well, you wrote about it a week ago. You know, I have been very much scrutinizing our recent tax incentives. I voted a handful of them. You know, I voted no on some of them. And again, it is about if I can't. You know, I don't have authority to increase the corporate tax rate here in the city of Columbus, or to demand that our, you know, corporate partners do a 5% contribution, although I sure hope they would. And I think that they could if we had that conversation as a community all together. But, you know, I can stop asking them to pay less taxes. And so that's where my head is at right now.
But council member, you did join the rest of the council to vote on some of the tax incentives most recently. Do you still believe that incentivizing those jobs is worth it for the deferred revenue?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, you know, one of them in particular was a company that had every reason to leave Central Ohio that employed 1,200 people. And we don't want to lose 1,200 jobs in this city, especially ones that have, you know, some of them are higher paying, you know, technical, you know, jobs, others in manufacturing or in, you know, kind of warehouse operations, supply chain. And so we're not just talking about, you know, we're talking about a diverse workforce of many workers. That's what those tools are for, right? You know, that's what those tools exist for. So I think that we have to start scrutinizing every dollar that we spend or that we defer, whether it is a dollar we're spending on a city program or a contract, or if it is a way that we're incentivizing development or economic development.
Hi. Excuse me. I'm Karen Mosenter. I'm the CEO of Jewish Family Services. And I love hearing all this language about investment in human infrastructure today. And I know that our sector, we find it, we know, it's obvious that there is an economic impact to the work that we do, whether it's helping families stabilize by accessing healthcare or housing, helping youth prepare for careers, helping their parents get jobs and be able to have childcare and elder care so if they can do that, helping their grandparents age in place. It's easy to tell stories about that impact, not so easy to quantify it. So Dr. Lafayette, I'm wondering to what extent you have advice for us, whether it's in this report or maybe the next report, that will help us make the case for those kinds of investments and show the economic impact that this has.
You can make a stab at quantifying the impact. For example, if you provide somebody job training so that they get a better job, the direct impact of that is the increase in their income. But there are impacts too in the increase in their employer's production and increases in household goods and services consumption of all kinds. That's part of it. The other part of it you can never quantify, and that's probably the most important.
Paper, scissors, or
I don't know how to play that really well.
Please go ahead.
I wanted to share, though, there are some of us in this space who have been able to identify funding to support investment in allowing us to state what our social return on investment is. Here at Boys and Girls Club of Central Ohio, as well as our Ohio Alliance and across Boys and Girls Clubs of America, have invested in years collating all of the data, and we pull a lot of data. And we are in position that we are able to say here in Central Ohio, for every dollar invested, returns about 17 or so dollars back in economic impacts for our community on an annual basis. And for us, those are things like health costs avoided from the work that we do to keep our young people away from vaping and smoking and alcohol. It's the economic impact of their caregivers' ability to earn because they're at work and their young people are at places safe. And so as we think about how we might approach this work from the investment lens, I actually do believe part of the conversation needs to be, to your point, how do we get our human services organizations in position so that they can tell their story truly from the lens of investment. We talk about investment in all of their infrastructure from a dollars and cents perspective. Let's figure out how we link arms to get that same story confidently told across our human services space.
Thank you for that, and thank you for that. I would be remiss if I didn't note that there is a report from a couple years ago, and Karen or Kim, all the agencies that work with immigrants can correct me here, that shows the economic impact of our wonderful, wonderful immigrant and refugee populations in Columbus. And I think it was $11 billion or something like that. We are so proud to be a community with so many wonderful immigrant populations here, and they give so much to this community, and I know that our nonprofits are honored to work with them.
There was also an interesting one that came out probably about a year ago out of Dayton, where they were looking at investments in mental health and substance use treatment, economic impact. Again, one of the other things that was most fascinating from this, and then there's some national studies too that look at this pretty comprehensively, and it's fascinating because they're not just, a lot of times when we talk about economic impact, we're talking about like upstream, like costs that we're avoiding having to pay. But to your point, Dr. Lafayette, like we're also talking about increased gross domestic product. Right, we're talking about savings to business owners when your employees come into work and they're healthy and you're able to retain them. I mean, we're talking about per employee cost of an unhealthy worker every single year is about $15,000 that an employer encumbers, just to navigate the challenges with that, and about $6,000 if they turn over. So a huge economic impact. But I'll just say this work matters because it matters. It makes dollars and cents, but I don't want to brush aside. I mean, that's what we got to do at the State House. We got to walk down there and say $17 for every $1 that you invest. But that shouldn't be what we have to do here in Columbus, in a community that I know values this work. And I know for all of you nonprofit leaders and employees in here, this is not an easy time. It is not a rosy picture that we want to paint up here. We see what is happening in our community, and as a community, we are called to act.
Thank you. We just have just a couple of minutes left. I want to try to get to one or two more questions. I want to get to one from the live stream. Carol Flaherty asks, is greater collaboration among local governments an important aspect of addressing future human service support?
I know the FRAC report talks about the city and the county, but what about all of the other municipalities? Michael or council member?
Yes. There are a lot of municipalities that are working on their own thing, and just like nonprofits have to continue collaborating more and differently, so do our municipalities.
Everyone, I wish we had more time, but I'm getting the wrap-up signal from Doug, so let's turn things over to Sophia for our closing remarks.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Central Ohio is expected to add hundreds of thousands of new residents in the decades ahead. This week, we unpacked a new report revealing how the city's population, economy, housing, and health will change by the year 2050. This week, we heard from Michael Corey with the Human Service Chamber of Franklin County. Rhea Cunningham with Boys and Girls Clubs of Central Ohio, Columbus City Council Member Melissa Green, and Bill Lafayette with Regionomics. Your host was Jordan Laird with the Columbus Dispatch. This week's forum was sponsored by the Bank of America Foundation. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation, with the Columbus Dispatch as our live stream and promotional partner. Additional support was provided by Downtown Columbus Incorporated and the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. If you'd like to keep exploring this week's forum topic, our fantastic partners at the Columbus Metropolitan Library recommend reading Another World is Possible, Lessons for America from Around the Globe by Natasha Zapata. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I'm Doug Buchanan. Thanks for listening.